Ladies, gentlemen, children, some people call me the master of the occult, the great psychogogue, the master of the invisible. I consider myself a doctor. I present to you the great Sar Duvnatar. I am a telepath, a mystic, and a paranormal investigator with countless victories over the battle champions of the invisible. And this evening, I'll be your guide into the spirit world. Chapter 1, The Seance.
I never thought I could experience again the joy, the untroubled quietness that comes with research and actual progress. We have discovered radium, polonium, forces beyond our most spectacular fantasies, as well as those of the greatest scientific minds.
My love, these phenomena that we have seem to us inexplicable by any trickery. Tables rising from four legs, transport of faraway objects, hands that pinch and caress you, luminous apparitions. Everything is in a place that was prepared by us, with participants we know well and no possible deception.
I call it odd. It is a universal, vitalist fluid that is no less a force than magnetism, electricity, or heat. Only the most sensitive and attuned persons can see it, though you can see its presence in this photographic plate here. Yes, the geometric haze above our head. Yes, right there.
Though I am grateful towards those eminent men and women of science, whose courageous championing of an unpopular cause has paved the way for tonight's event, I am personally just as skeptical as ever of all mediums, not just the great Eusebia Palladino.
I swear, I was pulled by a hand through a curtain. Eusebia, she called our attention to a black shadow that hovered beside us, but nobody saw it. Still, she is a technology herself, our link to the divine.
Fair tidings to all. I'm Eusebia Palladino, a medium. Tonight we are graced by our special guests, Marie and Pierre Curie. To my new friends, what else is the aim of science but to contact the dead? Let us turn to the summons of my assistant, Mr. Beckerel, as tunes us to the frequency of the underworld.
Who now inhabits the body of Sean Sandina? Lamia, what is it you desire?
I desire the soul of Kristen Brown. We will feast upon it as she festers on the brave.
No! Quick, you, open the box.
A brilliant light begins to flood out of the box that Eusebia hands to you. Inside are two vials whose gleaming seem suspended in darkness. They stir you with new emotion and enchantment, and they take on the dim of faint fairy lights and the cast of strange dark magic. Do you seize the vials? If so, keep listening. If not, scroll to the 4-minute, 5-second mark. End of chapter 1. Scroll to 4 minutes 25 seconds for chapter 2.
Game over.
Chapter 2, A Fine Day.
On August 6th, I stayed home. It was a fine day. My parents had gone out early. As I heard the air raid all-clear siren, the glass broke, and the shattered pieces whizzed at me. Knocked me down and I lost consciousness. When I came to, I put my hand on my head. It was slimy. I thought, I have to escape.
You stagger out of what used to be your home, now tons of scrap and slag, and you wander amidst the rubble, trying to find someone, anyone. All of a sudden, a cough from a pile of nearby rubble. It's a man, though you can barely tell. You want to embrace him, to hold him, but when you reach out to touch him, his black skin peels off like tissue paper. The air smells of flesh made liquid and then vapor. It feels like a strange fever dream. There's nobody else around. You tell him that you'll find some sort of medic, that you'll make him comfortable, though you know there's no help to be found. But he only shakes his head and rasps to you.
It's too much. It hurts so much. I need you to do something for me. Over there.
You see that he nods to the dull wooden handle of a kitchen knife nearby, flecks of rust spotted along the blade.
Please. It'll be quick, and then I can be with my family.
You turn back to him and you protest and you plead, and you tell him you could never do such a thing. But then you see the warmth in his pupils, and the smile of his mouth turned downward at the corner creases, the wisps of his long mustache ebbing with shallow breath. Do you relieve this man's suffering? If so, keep listening. If not, scroll to the 7-minute 45-second mark.
You tell him you'll do it as fast as you can.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
End of chapter 2. Scroll to the 8-minute 30-second mark for chapter 3.
You can't bring yourself to do it. You can't leave me here like this. He wheezes at you with spite. You're no better than them. You drop a knife and tell him you're sorry, promising that, though you're not sure when, someone will come to help. You look back at the man. You have to, just to see. His body remains slumped in the distance, but a thin line of red jaggedly swerves across his neck. The knife flecks off the rust barely visible in shallow light.
Game over. Chapter 3, An Accidental Eden.
On April 26, 1986, a beam of green-blue light was visible for miles around the Soviet Union's Chernobyl nuclear power plant. Toxic land around the plant was sealed off. This area has become known as the Zone of Alienation. Stripped of human activity for more than 20 years, myriad animal species, wolves, wild boar, raptors, bears, lynx, have migrated to the area, causing some to announce the creation of an inadvertent wildlife refuge, an accidental Eden.
End of chapter 3. Keep listening for chapter 4. Chapter 4, The Crystal City. You see a speck of blue and green far, far in the distance. This is Earth. The technicians around you don't seem to notice you. You are a mere shadow of the Shillelagh, just like me.
Crystal city awash in light and free from cosmic radiation. When I think how far humans have come, I look back to the archives and look at how different things were.
What do you mean?
I mean, our archivist pointed me towards the record of a seance conducted by this medium, Eusebia Palladino, that apparently went wrong. That the folk of ensuing centuries after this event looked at the whole account as magic? Is that which no person understands, where the simple cause and effect sat in plain sight unbeknownst to them, is simply baffling to me.
Paradoxically, I think of that old quote from the turn of the 32nd cycle, what the colonists called the 20th century, and this man, we don't know who said it precisely, said something along the lines of, "We may not believe, but we do not know that we should not believe."
How interesting. How little they knew then.
A thin gleaming portal opens in front of you. There is much to see and observe here, wherever you are. Do you enter the portal? If so, scroll to the 13-minute mark. If not, keep listening. However immaterial you might be, regardless of the outcome at the seance you attended earlier in the evening, you decide to stay and continue to listen to the conversation unfolding before you.
How funny it is that you mention it. That is the place of what they used to call science, though, is it not?
The end. A special thanks to all those contributors who made this recording possible. Margaret Habib, Abby Nowakowski, Jessica Fraser, Katie Jang, George Braden, Claire Parrott, and Chua Lorjong. End of chapter 4. Chapter 5. Coda.
Oh hey, are you okay there? You must have blacked out right as the seance started. Well, you missed quite a show. But you're awake just in time to listen to Madame Palladino give her final remarks in the evening.
Well, I wasn't expecting contact of that magnitude. Indeed, magic is a mystery, and we call a thing a mystery because we do not understand it. The technology, science, can respond to claims manifold, both far and wide. It cannot respond to tonight's proceedings. And with that, to all a good night.
The end. A special thanks to all those contributors who made this recording possible. Margaret Habib, Abby Nowakowski, Jessica Fraser, Katie Jang, George Braden, Claire Parrott, and Chua Lorjong.